It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We learn about the potential for incinerating garbage to recover energy. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency identifies two municipal waste combustors in Wisconsin among dozens nationwide. And one is the Barron County Waste Energy Facility in the northwestern part of the state. Call in with a question. You can share comments, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Lauren Wentz is a biology professor at UW-Eau Claire-Barron County campus, teaching an incinerator operator course through the State Department of Natural Resources. Lauren, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you, Kate.
Well, let's
start. Morning.
Good morning. Let's start with some definitions here. How do you talk about and define waste incineration?
Waste incineration is, well, it's pretty much what it sounds like, burning trash. There are different types of trash, and probably the form that most people deal with is municipal solid waste, which is generated from homes and businesses and schools. And in parts of the country and here in northwest Wisconsin, much of that municipal solid waste is incinerated.
At what temperature is it incinerated? How high does it go to burn trash?
Well, it depends on the structure of the incinerator, but using the Barron County facility as an example, there are two combustion chambers. The first one is where most of the burning occurs of the solid materials that are in the waste stream. That one operates at temperatures around 800 to 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit. The secondary chamber at this facility will operate at temperatures of about 1,800 degrees Fahrenheit, but it's burning mostly gases at that point.
And then going from the first chamber to the second chamber, how does the trash move or what it becomes? I mean, through the process, it seems to be shrinking down and shrinking down the waste.
Yeah, that's correct. A loading port or pit, if you will, where the actual waste is put into the primary chamber, and it moves along. There will already be a fire established there, but it moves along on a moving grate. As ash forms, the ash filters out through the grate, and by the time the initial load of trash is at the end of that chamber, it's almost entirely ash and gases. So the gases rise up, go into the secondary chamber, the ash falls out the bottom, and then is periodically collected for further disposal.
Is that what they call fly ash?
Well, there are three different types of ash that can occur during incineration. So bottom ash is the ash that falls through the grate as the trash is burned, and that's moved along on a conveyor as well. There, fly ash, if you think of like a campfire mm-hmm. in your backyard and you see the little sparks fly up into the air,
yep.
those are fly ash, and so there will be some of that that will be collected and passed through the system, eventually to be filtered out. But then there's also fugitive ash, and that's the type of ash that you don't want because it's ash that basically is uncontained. So there are methods or procedures in place to avoid the release of fugitive ash, especially from the accumulated bottom ash pile that is eventually disposed of in a landfill.
Does it have to go to a special landfill with this ash, or how is it disposed of?
According to U.S. EPA regulations, any bottom ash, fly ash, or other debris left over from the incineration process must go to a landfill, and it has to go to a special section, a monofill section of that landfill, where the only thing that's taken care of is the ash itself.
Lauren Wentz is with us, professor of biology at UW-Eau Claire-Barron County, as we talk about the process of waste incineration in Wisconsin. Call in with questions and comments along the way at 800-642-1234. So, Lauren, which materials can be incinerated at the Barron County waste-to-energy facility?
Almost anything from a municipal solid waste stream. There are regulations in place in Wisconsin that will say things like recyclable materials, yard waste, lead-acid batteries, tires, or waste oil cannot be burned in an incinerator. But the Barron County facility, because it is... I had notes on this. It has energy recovery from the incineration process. There are DNR makes exceptions for that, or the state of Wisconsin regulations make exceptions, and they are allowed to burn tires, recyclables, and yard waste as those occur in the waste stream. Lead acid batteries are a no-go. And similarly, appliances, white goods, as they're called collectively, cannot be incinerated.
How does the waste-to-energy facility ensure items that can't be incinerated, that they don't get into the process, that they aren't burned?
They are generally pretty good at screening materials as they come in. Of course, part of that depends on the refuse collectors who are also picking things up off the curb. For example, if someone came in with a pickup truck full of miscellaneous furniture, tires, whatever, all of that material would be screened up front to make sure there were no car batteries, for instance, in there. Those items can be accepted at the incinerator, but they can't be burned, the batteries specifically. Tires, though, are fine. And white goods can be recycled as well. And of course, there's a tipping fee for people who bring in large items like that so that the facility then can pass them on to recycling facilities that deal with white goods or batteries and so on.
How is the cost to incinerate a material determined? What goes into that?
Part of it is labor and the difficulty of recycling an item. Often, tipping fees are usually per pound, although there are some that are specific for certain items like mattresses. Mattresses are the bane of an incinerator operator's existence. So there is
Why?
Because they're big and bulky. They won't fit easily into the combustion chamber, so they have to be torn down. And I just learned from the manager at the Barron facility that they're going to acquire a waste shredder that will help deal with mattresses in particular. They burn just fine, but they can't fit into the chamber. So they're working on making it more feasible to actually burn mattresses at the facility as opposed to sending them out to a recycler.
We have biology professor at UW-Eau Claire-Barron County campus, Lauren Wentz, with us, teaches an incinerator operator course. Call in with a question. You can share your perspective, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency describes energy recovery from garbage as converting waste that can't be recycled into usable heat, electricity, or fuel through a variety of processes, including combustion. We learn about waste-to-energy incineration here in Wisconsin, and you can call in with a question or share comments. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Lauren Wentz is here, a biology professor at UW-Eau Claire-Barron County campus, teaches a course for incinerator operators. Lauren, the Barron County facility says the incineration process causes steam. How does the facility create steam energy?
Sorry about that. It's the heat of combustion that heats water that is circulated through a boiler system. And as that water is heated at very high temperature, it turns into steam. The steam itself can be routed in two different directions, both of which are forms of energy. One is to send it through a condensing steam turbine, which in the process of the turbine operating generates electricity directly on site at the facility. That can then be sent out to the grid, and I believe Xcel Energy purchases the electricity generated from our facility. The other form of energy, of course, is the heat from the steam itself. And that is actually distributed both on site at the incinerator facility to heat the working spaces. And it's also sent across the street to the Saputo Cheese Factory, where the cheesemakers there use it both to heat buildings and as part of the cheesemaking process.
Oh, wow. That's really interesting.
Yeah. Saputo is the world's largest producer of blue cheese, and it just happens to have that factory right across the street from our incinerator.
And so the plant burns a solid waste to heat mm-hmm. water, to generate steam. The steam mm-hmm. then drives like this electric generator turbines?
Yes, a turbine and then a generator, yes.
Okay. And then that can be sent to the grid or across the street to help make cheese.
in this case, the electricity goes to the grid. Uh-huh. But the steam itself, the actual steam, gets piped across the street to help make cheese.
Wow. Huh. So, you know, in terms of the pollutants, what are some of the new and modern air pollution control equipment that might be on these types of facilities?
Mm-hmm. There are a number of different air pollution control devices on site at an incinerator facility, and those are all required by both federal and state regulations. So there will be equipment that will deal, for example, with mercury. As mercury vaporizes during the combustion process, it's combined with activated carbon that essentially neutralizes the mercury, and that will be filtered out through the filtration process later, farther down the line, but it goes into the ash that then is disposed of in the monofill at the landfill. There are neutralizers for acid gases. So, for example, gases that contain sulfur or nitrogen compounds, and that's simply a matter of adding lime. Or a material called trona, which is essentially the same as lime. Then there are filtration systems, and at the Barron County facility, that includes what's known as a bag house, which essentially is like a large vacuum cleaner. It has dozens of individual fabric stacks. And when it's operated under negative pressure, the bag house works just like a vacuum cleaner would in your home to remove particulate matter from the gas stream. So that ultimately, as the gas itself passes through all of the air pollution control devices, it's monitored. So there's an emissions monitoring system as well. But by the time it gets to the stack where the remaining gas is vented off, the only thing coming out of the stack is carbon dioxide, water, and the original nitrogen gas that came in with the air that moves through the system. So, and nitrogen gas is 78% of our atmosphere, so it goes in one end, comes out the other, and is not harmful to us in any way. But CO2 and water are the final end products of the entire process.
What happens to the wastewater in the process?
That is collected, and it will be it can be treated at a wastewater treatment facility.
We're talking about waste incineration with Professor of Biology Lauren Wentz at UW-Eau Claire-Barron County. Call in questions and comments, 800-642-1234. Boa is here in Green Bay. Hi, Boa. Go ahead.
Good morning. I had a question. I wanted to find out how much tonnage of waste is burnt, you know, hourly, a day, or even a month, just to kind of get an idea of how much waste is taken off, you know, the community by using this system. And I, unfortunately, I just thought of another question, if you don't mind me adding, is what is the cost for a city to put up a system like you're describing?
Great questions, both. Thank you. First on the tonnage per hour per day, what is possible, and then costs of creating, building one of these facilities.
Well, I have statistics about the Barron County facility, which, according to federal and state regulations, is considered a small facility. A small facility, according to federal regulations, burns between 35 and 250 tons per day. But the Barron County facility last year, for the entire year, burned about 41,000 tons of municipal solid waste. They are permitted through the DNR to burn up to 100 tons per day, which means that the incinerator operates 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. And each of the two primary chambers that they have two side-by-side primary chambers. Each of those two is loaded with about 100 to 150 pounds of trash every 8 to 10 minutes or so, 24 hours a day.
Is it just the local trash for Barron County, or what distances might this municipal trash be traveling?
It could be traveling from as far away as Superior, Wisconsin, or as far south as, say, Hudson. So essentially the northwest corner of the state, and there may even be a few materials coming in across the Minnesota border.
In terms of looking at the costs of putting one mm-hmm. online, what do you mm-hmm. see there?
In the millions of dollars. Right now, the Barron County facility is undergoing an expansion to accommodate new air pollution control equipment, and I know that that is a multi-million dollar project just for that aspect of the incinerator itself. So it would depend on the amount of trash that would be burned and, you know, the size of the facility, that sort of thing. But it will be in the tens of millions of dollars, I'm certain, to build something new.
Do you have any, like, history there on how Barron County came to have one, or how it was able to afford one?
I don't know about the affordability question, mm-hmm. But the facility itself has been in existence since 1986. It went through significant upgrades within the last, I want to say, 15 years or so. It's now, in full compliance with all state regulations regarding emissions and waste handling and that sort of thing. So it's been around, but it's been continuously upgraded and improved over the years.
Where else in Wisconsin are these waste incinerators?
The only other facility in the state of Wisconsin that deals with municipal solid waste is in La Crosse, at the French Island facility owned by Xcel Energy. It is a slightly different layout as incinerators go. It's considered a refuse-derived fuel facility where they take in the solid waste but convert it to a pelletized form that can then be burned and used to generate energy in the form of steam or electricity.
Okay. We have biologist Lauren Wentz with us, created a course for Wisconsin operators of solid waste combustors that is approved by the State Department of Natural Resources. As we discuss aspects of burning trash, about incinerators, be part of this discussion. Call in with the question, what comes up for you? What are your thoughts? 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Waste combustion facilities are located in the village of Elmina in Barron County and La Crosse on the Minnesota border. That is from an Environmental Protection Agency nationwide map of municipal waste combustors. We explore environmental impacts and management of waste energy combustors, and you can be part of the conversation. Call in with a question, add comments, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Lauren Wentz is a biology professor at UW-Eau Claire Barron County campus, teaches a course for operators of incinerators. Let's bring in Mike in Madison now. Hi, Mike.
Yes, hello. Thank you for taking my call. So I'm curious about the products such as Milorganite and MetroGrow. Madison has MetroGrow, Milorganites in Milwaukee. They take human waste streams and create a fertilizer out of it for use in farming and in home applications. And I'm curious about the various pharmaceuticals, the cancer drugs that are in the waste streams. Do those remain intact? Is there some process that they go through that breaks down all of those very complicated compounds that humans are taking, the thousands of different pharmaceuticals? I would think they would still end up in the waste stream. And if it's simply an organism breakdown of the human waste stream, then I don't see how those would be dissipated or destroyed before they are put onto farm fields and applied to people's lawns and crops.
Mike, thank you for the call. And I think it also veers toward medical waste combustion. Lauren, go ahead.
Well, it does and it doesn't. The production of, for example, Milorganite is a byproduct of the wastewater treatment process, not an incineration process. So the degree to which any pharmaceuticals or other, you know, residual organic compounds could be removed from Milorganite depends on the wastewater treatment process. If the same material, the biosolids from wastewater treatment, were to be incinerated, there wouldn't be an issue. Those compounds would be completely destroyed at the high temperatures that incinerators operate at. However, handling biosolid waste requires a specific configuration of an incinerator. There is a biosolids incinerator in Green Bay. They don't handle trash at all. They simply handle the biosolids from the wastewater treatment process. So it's a slightly different end product, I suppose, in terms of the waste management process itself.
So Steve in Black River Falls called in to say that they think burning trash is the best way to get rid of garbage. Landfills, Steve says, tend to leak and pollute groundwater. Trash combustion, though, accounts for such a small portion of our country's waste management strategy. I mean, if you look at the map of the EPA, there are just dozens of these facilities. Why is burying garbage in landfills still the dominant strategy?
I wish I knew the answer to that. We know that land, the space, is an extremely limited resource, and landfills do have lifespans. For example, the Lake Area Landfill in Sorona, which is just north of Rice Lake, has an expected lifespan of about 35 more years before it's full. And at that point, it would either need to be expanded by acquisition of additional land or closed and monitored for a long period of time after closure. So landfills are governed by federal and state regulations in terms of their operation. Some of them do recover energy from the methane that accumulates during decomposition within the landfill, and that can be used as a form of energy, either for electricity production or steam generation as well. But why there aren't more incinerators, I'm not sure. In some places, locating an incinerator for burning municipal solid waste can be problematic. And again, there are federal and state guidelines that determine where an incinerator can be located.
Could the ash that is created and then landfilled, could that be intercepted to be upcycled into something else, like making concrete, for instance?
Yes. Yes, it can. There are a number of products that, and mostly, you know, construction type products that can be produced from ash, from incinerators, and also from the ash generated by power plants. So it's used for, you know, road material, you know, paving materials, that kind of thing, or landscaping materials.
So that it does have an ability to be used for something, mm-hmm. you know, but it's a matter of making that possible and intercepting it before it goes to landfill. Lauren Wentz is with us, professor of biology, UW-Eau Claire-Barron County. We talk about the process of waste incineration here in Wisconsin and beyond. Call in questions and comments, 800-642-1234. Kevin in Madison now. Hi, Kevin. Go ahead.
Yes, hi. I was a film critic in Milwaukee for the Shepherd Express newspaper and the Community Journal newspaper. And when I heard you all talk about incineration, it made me think about the movie Sahara with Steve Zahn, Penelope Cruz, and I always forget his name. All right, all right, all right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But anyway, and what happened was that there was they had a solar powered waste facility in Africa, and an unscrupulous operator was just going to dump the waste into the Atlantic Ocean. It was going to poison the whole west coast of Africa. And I thought about that because there was an exciting sequence where they were they tried to infiltrate the area because of Penelope Cruz. She was a scientist and she was an ecological activist, and they tried to sneak into the thing, and they snuck in one of the automatic bins and they carried them up to the solar power, and they almost got incinerated and stuff.
So the big screen waste incineration, you know, in movies as well. But Kevin, I think it brings up an important point. Do scientists know enough about the health risks or the ecological risks of being around these plants and the pollution, Lauren?
Yeah, and there is constant monitoring of both the emissions and the operation of the equipment within a facility that handles municipal solid waste. Part of an incinerator operator's job is to monitor daily, sometimes hourly, what's happening within the plant and recording all of the information about emissions and ash accumulation and that sort of thing. So there's very close monitoring of all of the different processes within an incinerator facility. And all of that is reported in Wisconsin, to the Wisconsin DNR, and ultimately to the US EPA. And those records, you know, are kept very, very diligently because the law says they have to be. So there is an understanding of what kinds of materials may be present, although in a facility that is operating according to federal regulations, the end products of the incineration process are, as I mentioned earlier, CO2 and water vapor, mm-hmm. Which are not going to, you know, pose a human health threat.
You mentioned, you know, from 1986 with Barron mm-hmm. County, there have been, you know, through the decades, a series of upgrades and refinements mm-hmm. to this facility, and now a shredder coming online as well. I'm wondering, are these upgrades the result of keeping up with federal requirements, or are these upgrades just because the technology is changing and the county wants to keep up? I mean, what causes a facility to continually mm-hmm. change and become better at what it's doing?
Mm-hmm. I would say that probably it's more efficient. Newer equipment, can create digital records of everything instead of a little bit slower paper records, mm-hmm. That sort of thing. And of course, storing the data collected on a daily basis is much easier. And of course, there are improvements in the equipment technology itself. In fact, once the expansion, the expansion to accommodate newer air pollution control equipment at Barron County is completed, they'll be able to increase their capacity by 50%.
Wow.
They're currently permitted at 100 tons per day. They'll be able to go up to 150 tons per day and at the same time reduce their emissions by 50%. So the upgrade is making the air pollution control process that much more efficient.
I wonder, you know, as I was reading about this, there are some states like Florida that are really leaning in, gearing up to do more waste combustion in the future. Mm-hmm. What do you think is Wisconsin's trajectory here? I mean, do you hear about more communities wanting to go this route with their trash?
I'm not sure what the situation would be in the state of Wisconsin. Obviously, there are startup costs and there may be, an energy company like Xcel or We Energies that, you know, would look into something like that. As communities go, for, say, a county to establish its own incinerator, cost will be part of the calculation.
Mm-hmm.
And that would need to be, you know, weighed against the cost of expanding a landfill or adding another landfill. So it's certainly the case here in Barron County that the waste incinerator can generate revenue for the county. So part of the reason they're able to do a multi-million-dollar expansion is because of the revenue that's generated from selling the energy that they produce.
Lauren Wentz, creator of a multi-day training course for operators of solid waste combustors in partnership with the Department of Natural Resources. Call in with a question. Share your thoughts. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The State Natural Resources Department estimates Wisconsin generates 4.6 million tons of trash and recyclables each year. How much of that could be incinerated? So we're learning about how waste-to-energy facilities work. Lauren Wentz is a UW-Eau Claire Barron County biology professor, teaches an incinerator operator course. Lauren heard from Deb in Green Bay, called in to ask, what happens when the monitoring system breaks down? What is the backup plan at an incinerator?
Mm-hmm. If a monitoring system should did go offline temporarily. It is possible to stop the incineration process. It's a process, so it may take several hours to do that. But the incinerator can be shut down and the problem rectified, and then the facility can be fired up again once the situation is corrected.
Let's bring in Gary in Duluth. Gary, hello. Go ahead.
Yes, the question I had is the mercury content of the waste is what was an issue in Duluth when we had an incinerator here. The WLSSD had to shut down its incinerator because of the mercury emissions that both went up the stack and out in the wastewater with the scrubbers. Many wastes, particularly from hospitals, have mercury content in them. And people throw away things as switches and light bulbs and things like that that get incinerated. And the mercury is a major issue for the Duluth area.
Gary, thank you. Yes, thank you for bringing that perspective. Lauren, what about mercury emissions here that are concerning?
Well, anytime mercury shows up in the solid waste stream, of course, it's a concern. But through the air pollution control process, the addition of activated carbon to adsorb the mercury atoms will effectively neutralize the mercury and not make it, and at that point it's unable to get back into the environment in its harmful form. So again, that becomes part of the ash that's collected and disposed of in a monofill at a landfill. There are issues. I mean, there have been issues nationwide and even worldwide with toxic materials like mercury sort of escaping from the incineration process. But in a well-run, well-monitored facility, it's not necessarily a concern. It's monitored, it's controlled, but it's not released into the environment.
Let's turn to your 32-hour course that you teach. Mm-hmm. What type of training must an incinerator operator go through to be certified in Wisconsin?
Well, the 32 hours cover a range of topics from the history of solid waste management to the regulations, both federal and state regulations that govern waste incineration, to how to handle waste. Simply, you know, how do you deal with things like mattresses or tires or construction materials that enter the waste stream? It includes things like how to keep records and working worker safety on the job, risk management on the job. So it's really a gamut of topics, but they all relate to waste incineration.
Have you had to change the course at all since you created it?
Not significantly in terms of the content. That is specified in the Natural Resources Statute 499 in the state of Wisconsin. So there's a list of topics that are required to be covered in the course. But I generally tweak the presentation of those topics a little bit every year just to make it more interesting and more fun.
I would imagine, too, that there are site visits to Barron County as part of the process, as part of the certification.
Yes. So the anyone who takes part in the course will have an opportunity to visit that facility, although some of the students in that course are workers at the Barron County facility already.
Okay,
so they kind of
sure.
know their way around.
Who's going to show whom here?
Right. And let me tell you, they can tell me more about the inner workings of the machinery and the equipment there than I could ever hope to tell them. But we've also had students in the course from the Wildlife Research Lab in Madison, several of the hospitals in Madison, and even from French Island, the incinerator in La Crosse, take part in the course in order to get the certification. Even though their facilities may be very different from the Barron County one, The certification through the state DNR is important to the work that they do in those facilities.
What protective clothing do they wear around the incinerator chambers?
Well, it depends on where you are on mm-hmm. or within the plant. But in any case, obviously reflective vests, just so you can see where people are in what can be a somewhat dark space. Sensible shoes, closed-toed shoes, coverall, I don't want to say often, but sometimes respirators or masks just to, avoid inhaling dust and debris from the waste pile itself.
Mm-hmm.
So the general personal protective gear that you would encounter in any industrial setting is probably the best way to describe it.
Trista sent along an email asking, what do incinerators use for fuel to operate?
The fuel itself is the trash. To get it ignited, I actually asked this question of the operators last summer when I taught the course. A lighter, set something on fire, and once you have that going, the trash itself is the fuel for combustion.
Is there any particular order the trash must go in order to keep the chamber a regulated heat setting, mm-hmm. keep the heat at a certain temperature?
Generally, the best idea is to mix it, because different materials have different heating values, as mm-hmm. they're called. So, for example, if someone is throwing away a bag full of food waste that can be very wet, right, you want to mix that as much as you can with, say, paper or wood chips or something much drier,
mm-hmm.
So that you get, as close as you can to a well-mixed fuel load, and that will help things burn more evenly and help maintain the temperatures within the primary chamber at the level they should be maintained.
In our last moments, squeaking in one last question, Tony emailed to ask, do we know the power generation per ton of waste?
Per ton, for the Barron County facility, I cannot give you the, per ton
mm-hmm.
Energy generation, but last year, the facility sold about 5,100 megawatts of electricity and generated over 103,000 or 102,000 tons of steam. So, again, that goes into the cheese factory and heating at the plant.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, Lauren, we appreciate you joining us. Thank you.
Thank you so much. It was great fun, Kate.
Lauren Wentz is a biology professor at UW-Eau Claire Barron County campus, teaches an incinerator operator course that we talked about through the State Department of Natural Resources. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.